Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Ah, bright and early in the morning. How was your night's sleep? And who did you sleep with? Well, I'm getting a little personal, I know. But what I mean is, did your dog or cat or dogs or cats share your bed with you? A new survey out suggests that a whole lot of people would rather sleep with their best friends with four legs than their partners with two legs. We'll talk about that. Dr. Julie Levy is the Fran Marino Endowed Distinguished Professor, Shelter Medicine Education, University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine. Boy, that's the longest title ever, but it is so well-deserved, Dr. Levy. You know that I have absolute admiration and respect for everything you have done for veterinary medicine, specifically for shelter medicine. And here we are at a time, and I'm talking to a legend, folks. I mean, truly. And we're at a time now where feline infectious peritonitis, a disease that often affects cats, most often kittens, which is what is one thing that's so terrible about it, we kind of have a solution for. Would you have ever thought that you'd live to see the day?
You know, I always hoped I would live to the day, but I graduated vet school in 1989, and FIP was a death sentence at the time, and many, many decades of research since then didn't seem to move the needle at all. But in the past few years, an antiviral drug was discovered that cures almost all affected cats. It does seem like a miracle.
And it's a drug you might know the name of. But let's back up before we talk about that and explain what FIP, or feline infectious peritonitis, is in the first place.
Yeah, it's a very confusing disease. It's caused by a very common virus that many cats are exposed to. And then within some cats, that virus will have a mutation that will become lethal, and that creates the disease FIP. To make it even more complicated, only certain genetic backgrounds of the cat will allow the disease to progress. So that's why it's so hard to predict which cats will be affected and to handle it in any sort of preventive way. There is no effective vaccine to prevent it. And since the virus itself is so widespread, it's hard to prevent exposure, too.
All right. So you're talking, interestingly enough, because this ties into what we're about to talk about here. You're talking about a coronavirus, the feline coronavirus. People cannot get the feline coronavirus. Cats do. And most of the time, they don't even get sick. Or if they get sick, by the time you call your veterinarian, who calls you back like an hour later, the cat's fine. And it usually is a runny stool or some such thing, which kittens get anyway. And it mostly does impact kittens. But then in a percent of cats, as you allude to, something happens and it transforms inside the cat to an immune-mediated disease, a very different thing than the coronavirus I'm talking about, called feline infectious peritonitis. And to my knowledge, we don't even completely understand why that happens in certain cats, doesn't happen in other cats. You mentioned genetics has something to do with it. We believe stress has something to do with it. I mean, it's not even completely understood, except what's been understood until very recently is that if that happens, there's a death sentence for a kitten. But now, a One Health story, and you'll explain what One Health is, has happened. We hear about One Health with dogs frequently, with cats not nearly as often. And an organization called what was called the Win Feline Foundation, now the Every Cat Health Foundation, has a lot to do with this. Another legend in veterinary medicine, Dr. Niels Petersen, University of California, Davis, has a lot to do with it. And I'll let you pick up with the story from there.
Yeah, I was so fortunate that Dr. Petersen was one of my professors in veterinary school. And I remember to this day, 30 years ago, that he said, "I can't retire until I solve the problem of FIP."
Yeah.
And in fact, he did retire. However, he never stopped working on this. And he came across an antiviral drug that showed promise against coronaviruses. And he tested it on cats that had FIP, both experimental infections and naturally infected cats. And it was miraculous. They didn't really believe the results at first. But cats that were nearly at death's door were recovering and seemed to be cured.
And that drug is a name we'd know for what reason, or potentially know for what reason.
Yeah, it's remdesivir is the brand name, and it's a household name now because it was used as a treatment for COVID-19. It's the one of the only antivirals that was licensed for that use, and so it has been used in people with COVID. And that's the One Health story. One Health refers to the convening of animal, human, and environmental health, and this is certainly a thread that crosses those.
Indeed, and literally millions of people around the world have been helped by, or saved in some cases, by remdesivir, this drug we're talking about. And that drug was to be used initially to help cats in the study. It turns out that the pharma company gave, well, didn't give, but allowed a drug just like it to be used. That drug, as you suggest, was amazing because who ever thought that cats with feline infectious peritonitis could be cured? But then the company said, you know what, you can't use that drug. Dr. Peterson said, all right, we can do better than that. Now we've got another drug we can use, and they created a different compound. It turns out, though, that the story has a confusing ending. You'd think, okay, we've got a drug, maybe two drugs available to help kittens with FIP, but it didn't turn out yet that those drugs are readily available, Dr. Levy.
Yes, and therein lies the urgency and the heartbreak that veterinarians and cat owners are facing today. Remdesivir actually is being used for cats with FIP in Australia and across Asia and in the UK, but as a veterinarian here in the United States, I'm not allowed to use it, even though I know it would save lives of these cats. So now I have to tell my cat owner clients that you can either watch this cat die or seek a source of the drug, but I can't help you for that. And then that leads to what is a fascinating story of what desperate cat owners are doing to save their cats.
Yeah, so they're going online. They're going to the black market, which neither you or I are endorsing. But I'll tell you, if it's my cat, I would do what I need to do, you know, and I totally understand that. And the problem with the black market, well, among other problems with the black market drugs, are you don't necessarily know what you're getting. And different companies have different quality, and nobody knows exactly what that is. Different companies have different results, and they're not telling us what those results are they?
No, it's really is a black box that people are going into out of desperation. A really exciting thing happened this week was a new paper was published out of Ohio State University where they surveyed nearly 400 cats that were treated with these unlicensed drugs that had FIP, and 97% of them survived. Remember, this is essentially 100% fatal disease without treatment, and almost all of the cats that were treated with these sketchy products survived. So this is so hopeful. As a vet, I'm really frustrated that my colleagues in Australia, the UK, and across Asia can use this life-saving medication, but my hands are tied in the U.S. I'm really hoping that cat owners and their veterinarians can appeal to business and regulators to make treatment available on a compassionate use basis while we wait for the regulatory system to do what it needs to do for licensed drugs.
So well put. Gilead is the name of the pharmaceutical company. And, yeah, we want to see cats' lives saved, and we want to see it done the right way with drugs that are proven. But, as you said, these unregulated drugs seem to be somehow doing the trick. It's complicated, but it's something that we should talk about rather than just shove under the rug. Dr. Julie Levy, is always great to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Steve, and thanks for everything that you do for cat advocacy.
Mackenzie Dillon is a sleep coach for myslumberyard.com. Mackenzie, this is the first time I think I have ever spoken to a sleep coach. What does a sleep coach do? Do you go into people's bedrooms at 3 a.m. and say, you've got to do a better job of sleeping. Move over to the right. Move over to slide into first base. What does a sleep coach do?
Oh, yes. I think people might be a little frightened if I showed up in their bedrooms in the morning. However, if they were to come to me with any sleep woes, with any of their trouble sleeping, I will provide sleep tips, just general sleep information that people might be interested in. My goal in life is to just help people get the best night's sleep they can and understand how important sleep is.
Well, it turns out by a survey you just did that the best night's sleep you can get might be with a dog.
Yes. Interestingly enough, it seems about 50% of people who own dogs let them sleep with them in bed at least once a week, which is very interesting. That's high.
Yeah, and it turns out that some people would rather sleep with their dog than their partner.
Yes, Steve, that is true. Some people cited that they'd rather sleep with their dog, mostly because their partner either snores, they take up too much space, or they just get around a lot in the middle of the night to go pee, go just get a glass of water, and dogs don't really do that as much.
Well, they do some of that. If you have a pug or a French bulldog, I mean, the neighbors might hear the snoring then. Yeah. So or an older dog or an overweight dog, they do tend to snore. But there is something about sleeping with a dog that's comforting, you know, and this isn't new. So the line has been, Mackenzie, for many years, dogs have been outdoors, then they've gone indoors, then they've gone into our bedrooms, and now into our beds. Truth is, 10,000 years ago, Cro-Magnon men, or more than that actually, Cro-Magnon men slept with, they shared, I don't know if they had a bedroom, but whatever they lived in, they shared it with these dog wolves. They weren't even quite dogs yet. And what's amazing, it's amazing, you have two predatory species, and they trusted us with their puppies, and we trusted them with our little babies. And part of it was, I don't think there were space heaters back then, so probably a part of it was utilitarian, a way to keep warm. And also, the dogs were alert to danger. Well, what's interesting is some of what I just said is even true today. For example, some people in your survey said, well, I feel protected because my dog is there with me.
Yeah, exactly. It seems like we might still have some of those primitive instincts in us, especially women. 30% or 37% of them cited that they feel more safe when they sleep with their dog. People also said that it reduces stress and that they just generally feel more comfortable at night when they're sleeping next to their pup.
You didn't look at cats, though. Why didn't you ask people about cats?
It is National Adopted Dog Month, Steve. If we were looking at cats,
that's true,
we should have done a little study, but this month we're focused on the pups.
Okay, next year you have to promise me you'll look at cats. You know where cats sleep more than anywhere else?
Where? In bed?
Wherever they want is the answer to that. And oftentimes, really, it is in our bed or on our heads. So is it, you're the expert. You are the sleep expert. Is it beneficial to have a dog or a cat or two? Most people don't have one pet who have a pet, actually. I think the average is like 1.3 or 1.5 pets or something like that. So oftentimes it's two dogs and a cat or something. Is it beneficial to share the bed with a human partner and maybe two dogs and a cat?
Well, it seems like it's personal preference. If you suffer from allergies or a really light sleeper, you might want to have your dog sleep in a little dog bed next to your bed. But an overwhelming amount of people seem like they really do enjoy sleeping with their dog. And it is beneficial if it's not messing with your sleep and if it's generally making you feel more comfortable at night.
So what you work for, what's the name of the website here? Let's give it again for you.
I work for myslumberyard.com.
And what is myslumberyard.com?
So our goal is to allow people to get the best night's sleep that they can, and we want to guide them to that. So we provide mattress reviews, honest pillow reviews, and different sleep products. And we also provide just general sleep content if you're looking on sleep tips on how to get a better night's sleep or how much sleep an adult might need, just general sleep content like that.
You know, Mackenzie, it seems interesting to me. I don't know where you went to college. I assume you did. And when you enrolled, you said, I want to enroll in a major sleep. What college has that? I mean, when did you decide when you got up in the morning one day, I want to be a sleep coach?
Yes, my career path has been an interesting one. I went to college wanting to be a writer, and turns out once I graduated college, I loved to sleep. And so it's something that we all do. It's something that we don't really think about a lot. So once I had the opportunity to work for my slumber yard, I jumped on it. And, yeah, so now I just am a mattress expert and a sleep science coach, which has been pretty helpful in a niche little talent, if I say so myself.
Though that's a familiar sound to you and one you'd like to hear, I suppose, but maybe one we don't hear enough. I've read Americans don't get enough sleep, and in fact, that makes us more susceptible to illness, including potentially SARS coronavirus 2 that causes COVID-19.
Yes, sleep is really important as to the recovery process and for your immune system. It works on recovery, and it's really important to get that full night's sleep so you give your body a chance to go through all of its processes, to go through that REM sleep, and to make sure that you are getting the recovery you need and your immune system is being built strong enough to protect yourself against COVID or SARS or any illnesses that might come your way.
Now, I don't know if this is your expertise. We do know, I know, that dogs and cats dream. They have rapid eye movement or REM sleep, just like we do. The question is, are you ready?
I'm ready. I hope so.
What do our dogs dream about?
If I'm correct about this, I believe, do they dream about us?
Well, it would be, right. I would actually assume that would be the case because we dream about what is familiar to us. We don't dream about people we've never met. We dream about what's familiar, right? So I would assume that, or experiences, and then they're exaggerated or things happen like you're flying and all those things that happen. But I would assume that it's the same for dogs.
I would assume so, too. I'm not 100% sure on their dreaming patterns, but that is very interesting to know. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? What do they dream about specifically?
Well, I'm not a dog, so I don't know, or a cat. But, you know, it's always been presumed that the only thing they dream about are squirrels, you know, when they move their legs and they're right. But they've got to be dreaming about more than that. They've had more than that in their life experience. I'll tell you, I need to talk to you again at some point. An interesting conversation about a topic we don't talk about often enough, right? And that is our sleep patterns with our companion animals, our best friends with four legs who these days share our beds. Mackenzie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Steve. This has been a great conversation. Thank you so much for having me.
This is fascinating to me how rats, city rats, have adjusted during the pandemic. So as restaurants were closed during the pandemic and some permanently, that's where most rats, most of the time, typically would go for their dinner. Well, that's not the case anymore to the extent that it was, and certainly in the height of the pandemic. So the rats pivoted. They said, okay, let's go to the trash can out in residential areas. And that's exactly what they did. Residential trash cans have always been high on the list for rats, but now they are number one. That means more rats in backyards. That means we have more exposure to rats, and that means our dogs have more exposure to rats as well. And that can impact our health. What am I talking about? Well, rats are the primary carrier of several diseases, but number one on the list, likely leptospirosis. It's a bacterial infection that loves water. So any source of water, from a little puddle to in a condo development, you know, the ponds that are up front, to a real pond, to a lake, a stream, any fresh water, leptospirosis can live in if the rat or other animal infected. There's lots of urban wildlife and lots of wildlife, even farm animals, potentially, can piddle in the puddle or wherever it is. If they are infected, another animal laps it up, or simply we could get it. We simply put our hands to our mouths, and then we get it. Now, it's not too common of an occurrence for people. However, it is for toddlers. So let's say an infected dog piddles even in a backyard and a toddler crawls through. Toddlers do what they do. They put their hand to their mouth and now that toddler can be infected. The way to prevent that from community spread to other dogs or to us is vaccination. And with more rats around, leptospirosis is even more of a problem. Now, in this public health study that I talked about, conducted right here in Chicago, 21% of respondents reported an increase in rat sightings around their homes during the day. Many respondents described feeling unsafe on their own patio or in their yard. You know what? The answer is to protect against leptospirosis. That's one answer. So ask your veterinarian about the vaccine that protects against the four most common cerevirus and urinary shedding. Your veterinarian will know what that means. That means it best protects you, your family, and your dog as well. Well, let's also figure out a way to do away with the rats altogether, at least to the extent that we can. I will talk about that in the future, I can assure you. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, right here on WGN.